Good morning and welcome to our sing-along.
Sing-along. One note samba, ladies and gentlemen. Wonderful, wonderful music.
Good to have you here. Welcome, and we'll start the week off right. It's the 23rd of June, and it's a delight to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you for this Monday morning. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
How do you do?
I'm fine, thank you. And newsman Ray Graff is with us as well.
How do you do?
Yes. It's always been firmly established that this is the way Alan greets people that he doesn't like.
Yes.
That's not true.
And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here.
Good morning, everybody.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice to
one in every crowd.
To have you with us. And we always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And let us begin with the news from Iraq. John Kerry has arrived in Baghdad. And meanwhile, the Iraqi government said Sunday that Sunni militants had taken control of a major Iraqi post on the Syrian border, strengthening their ability to move men and supplies into Iraq's heartland. As the government tried to cast a setback in a positive light, saying troops had made a tactical decision to withdraw, Secretary of State John Kerry appeared to increase the pressure on Iraq's leadership by signaling that the U.S. was open to the selection of a new prime minister who could bridge the deep sectarian divides in the country. So, Alan, let us begin with you. What do you make of that?
So here we are now telling another country who should be their prime minister, what they should do. Pardon me. Now, I agree that things are really out of whack there. But I think that once you break it, you own it. I think that once you involve yourself in this, you have a responsibility. Let's just say they say, okay, United States, you can have anything you want. Let's do it. We'll get rid of Maliki. He'll go. You'll pick the players, and then nothing changes. It's still bad. It gets worse. Then what are you obligated to do as a country?
Well, I could jump in here and suggest what would.
I hope you do.
What would happen?
Well, you didn't like what I said.
No. No, but what I mean, you know, what would happen? Is it too late? I mean, some people are arguing it's too late to make a change. I mean, for Maliki to suddenly accept the other factions to you know, accept the Kurds and give them a role in the government and to let the Sunnis, who he's been in battle with, have a role in his government just seems like an impossibility. What if we just sit back and let the inevitable happen? What is the outcome, and why should we not do that, I guess, is the case.
No, I mean, you're right. There is a whole school of thought that you can't get rid of Maliki now because it just makes things even worse. My problem is what the eventual role of the United States is going to be. We saw Rand Paul this morning saying he wouldn't want his – now, this is a Republican. trying to get the nomination for president, saying, I wouldn't want my kid over there.
I think that will have traction. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who agree with him. If we own it, we broke it back in 2004 or wherever,
and
2003.
Many times before.
Yeah, 2003 and then again and again. If we broke it, how long do we have to keep it before we can give it back or turn it over?
And how do we have to keep it? Yeah, in other words, right. What is our investment going
on? I think that the president thought we gave it back when we got out of there, and he has resisted till now, and I think he's firm. I mean, he appears firm in refusing to go back in like some would like him to do.
I have a comment and then a question, which is the comment is it seems as though everything that everybody said, not everybody, but a lot of keen insiders, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, that they said was going to happen when we got out is happening, right? I mean, this is sort of I told you so at its best, because the big concern was, well, when we leave, everything's just going to go to hell.
Okay, that's your comment. Now the question.
Okay, so the do you buy? Is that true?
Well, it is true, but on the other hand, what are we supposed to do? Stay there forever? I mean, at some point.
Well, no, this was our argument when this was the argument by many of going in the first place. That once you go in, what are you going to do? And then you're eventually going to have to leave, and then you're mired there forever.
And then you own it. And this is not Vietnam, I can tell you right now. We lucked out in Vietnam because it turns out that the great domino theory didn't do what all of the naysayers said. It turned out that they're now amongst our best friends. in terms of the economy. This is not going to happen here. So if this Syrian Iraqi area becomes no man's land, which I think it is going to be.
It is.
Yeah. Then you have a situation like you had in Afghanistan, where 9/11 comes out of it, and this becomes a launching pad for many, many bad things.
Well, if you recall back in 2003, the argument was that they will greet us with flowers as we liberate the country from Saddam Hussein, and then we would establish a permanent base of operation in Iraq to kind of stabilize the Middle East, and by now things would be much better than they have been. That was a failed policy, but that was the argument for it, and getting rid of weapons of mass destruction.
Now, the question is, and Alan, you addressed this a little bit at the beginning, but so John Kerry starts the day by saying,
"How'd you like to be him?"
Well, I mean, wow, and we'll get into more of into Egypt in a moment. But here you have John Kerry, and he says, you know, I think we have to be open to a new president and to a new prime minister, and we have to be open to this. And then gets on a plane to talk to this guy to work things out. Now, what are those meetings like?
How'd you like to be in that room?
Man.
How'd you like to be the fly on the wall?
So, I mean, obviously that's calculated.
Well, obviously, sure. He's basically saying, look, I'm setting up the premise for the negotiation, which is you get out. Now, if you want to stay, then you have to please me. You have to do what I need. And when I walk in the room. But here's the thing. I mean, either this is a transparent administration and our foreign policy is transparent, or there's all kinds of stuff going on that we'll never know about.
Until Kerry writes his book in 2017.
Yeah. Right. But it won't be on the way into the presidency.
That was a wonderfully journalistically, a wonderful journalistically cynical comment.
Joe, you'll probably get to interview him when his book comes out.
Oh, can't wait. Okay, so when you look at what's next here, because meanwhile we keep on hearing on the other side, you keep on hearing about further and further troop movements, further and further, more and more towns that are being taken over. So I think I asked this question last week, and I'll ask it again and days later of, okay, but at what point does this become, you know, do we actually have to take action?
Well, you compared it, Alan, to what could result to what Afghanistan was when it was basically the birthplace of Al-Qaeda, or the gestation place of Al-Qaeda, and that's from where 9/11 was launched. In other words, it sounds like you're agreeing that if we let it happen, or if we don't do anything to prevent it from happening, and other countries don't get together to prevent it from happening, that we'll have another launch pad for attacks on the U.S. And that does pick up some of the rhetoric of the more conservative people who are urging, like John McCain.
Also the president.
Yeah.
And the president said the same thing on Friday.
Well, that's true. You're right. Yeah, I think there's agreement that it's not a good thing just to let it go. But nobody can agree on what to do.
Within your comment, there is something that is sort of pregnant. And that is, is there the possibility that by our taking not the action that those would want us to, but staying shut, as Mrs. Wick, my eighth grade teacher said, Shut Talk, say shut. If we just stay shut, does somebody, nature abhor a vacuum, will others come in? In other words, you have a lot of people who have interests in the Middle East. And if we take all the pressure off by going in or doing something, does that mean that they won't, that the others won't do anything? But it gets very complicated because you got the Saudis who are basically, as you know, on the side of the anti-Shia side, and they are major players there. On the other hand, some of these types who are coming in and trying to take over may be Sunnis, but they are not the kind of Sunnis that the Saudis like. So it gets very, very complicated.
Meanwhile, back in the United States, in come the pollsters. And they tell us the latest New York Times CBS News poll found that while many see President Obama's actions as appropriate, there are large partisan differences. The poll says 41% of the public said Mr. Obama was properly addressing the violence in Iraq, 29% said he should do more, and 22% preferred he do less. As usual, when discussing views about Mr. Obama, opinions varied widely by party identification. Most Republicans, 53%, would rather see him do more to tackle the problem in Iraq, while a majority of Democrats, 63%, said he had done enough.
Well, look, it's on his watch. That we've agreed on before. No matter what happens, no matter what action he takes, no matter how many times you can blame George Bush and all the rest, it's still on his watch. On the other hand, I think he could find some real encouragement in those polls. In other words, when you add up the people who think that, you know, he's doing a good job plus one of the other two camps, you get a clear majority. That's pretty good news for the White House. I'm sure they're looking at those polls.
But why should the polls matter to a guy who is finishing his last term? Shouldn't what's on the ground and what he perceives as what is right be much more important than whether 63% or 42% think he's doing a good job?
As always, Raymond, you make a good point. But there's a big difference between a Democrat who wants to see himself go down in history as a as an effective president, as opposed to. And I would say to you, take a look at the polls before World War I and World War II, and you will find that nobody had any stomach for either of those wars until Pearl Harbor came. So so people have a way of saying stay out, stay out, stay out, and the political establishment has a way of getting them in.
We're going to take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We welcome your comments. We'll read from the mail in a moment.
Yeah.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will return after this short break.
Support comes from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tasting Saturday afternoons. SpiritHAUS.com. PS21 Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York. Presenting Walking Dog Theater, performing long-form improv, Thursday, June 26th through Saturday, June 28th at 8 p.m. PS21Chatham.org. And Twillez, Ford, Gold, Butler, and Monroe, LLP, a New York law firm representing physicians and healthcare professionals for over 100 years. NYMedDefense.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan.
Okay. I remember, and many of our listeners will, that we used to have a morning guy on, Robert J. Lertzimer, and he used to read the news, and he'd say, the news is prepared and written by Robert J. Lertzimer, but you would always rip it right off the wires and read whatever. One day he couldn't find it, and he said, apparently there is no news this morning. We have no letters.
Okay.
All right.
Well, better say something, scandalous, and people will write in.
I don't know that it has to be scandalous.
Well, yeah. Is it because it's beautiful weather and people are away from their
keyboards? No. I think they're listening with great interest.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, listening out in the, with their.
You know, I think if anybody said if anybody said anything that they didn't like, you can be sure you would hear from them, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, Rand Paul over the weekend, just to get back to your
earlier comment.
Earlier comment, right. Rand Paul, who is a contender, seen as a contender for the 2016 Republican nomination and actually getting a lot of traction in a lot of other areas, is being called an isolationist by Dick Cheney, you know, who was the former vice president who kind of got us into Iraq.
Yeah, he wasn't an isolationist.
He was not an isolationist. And he's out there defending the decision to go into Iraq and back in 2003. And is there any, you know, Is Paul taking a big risk here, Alan? Is he really playing to the populace?
Well, let me put it this way: it is, you know, Joe mentioned quite rightly that the Republicans are on the other side of Obama, no matter what. So if he's not taking enough action, they yell about him and the rest of it. So to some degree, Paul basically agreeing with the president's policy puts him at some risk by doing that. But he is developing a reputation as a libertarian who will say what he thinks. It goes directly to what we've just been talking about, what Ray was just talking about. Do you do what's right or do you do what's political in a traditional sense? So, I liked it. I there's a lot of stuff he says that I don't like, but I liked it. Now, come to a general election, that will serve him well because there will be Democrats and others who will remember that he spoke out. They spoke out and that he was independent and that he could do that if he ever gets to a general election, which I suspect he won't, because in a primary, this will hurt him.
We were talking a moment ago and I mentioned John Kerry's name and you said, how would you like to be him? So this is a guy who has been obviously very busy and doing a lot on a lot of different fronts. And so we've been talking about his trip to Baghdad. We've been talking about the Iraq situation and the pressure on him for that. However, we should also talk about Egypt and the renewing ties with Egypt and what he was what he did at the beginning of the weekend, late Saturday, early Sunday. Secretary of State John Kerry signaled Sunday that the Obama administration was ready to repair relations with Egypt. After a 90-minute meeting with the president of Egypt, John Kerry said at a news conference that he had come to reaffirm Washington's historic partnership with Egypt. We want to see the people of Egypt succeed, he said, and also that he and the president had discussed, most importantly, our mutual determination for our countries to work together in partnership.
Don't you all think that our position in at any given time is predicated on what is going on and how badly we need other people?
Right.
I mean, you know, we needed the Russians in the Second World War quite badly. So we sort of took a time out in our capitalistic sense of we don't want to do things the way those guys are doing them over there because we had a war to win. And I think to some degree, what's going on in the Middle East right now means we need Al-Sisi. Is that how you pronounce his name?
President Al-Sisi?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We make the necessary adjustments. There would be times in previous administrations and in this administration when you take a guy like this, who, after all, is just doing what has always been done in Egypt. The strong man becomes the president, of the country, and the hell with democracy. You criticize it, but not now.
Right. He's quiet. He's no longer portraying what's going on in Egypt as moving toward democracy. Mm-hmm. And it looks like
he's not raising expectations.
Right, right. He's kind of lowering expectations.
The timing is pretty odd because today, this morning, those three journalists, they're going away for 10 years.
Yeah. And Al Jazeera, for those who
Al Jazeera journalists who today the verdict came down. That's very bad timing for Kerry to be in there from a public relations standpoint.
Yeah, somebody's going to ask him the question.
Oh yeah. And
allegedly they talked about it over the weekend, but that was before the verdict.
Doesn't Congress have to approve the fund restoring the $650 million in military and $1.3 million in additional support and all that?
I mean, I'm assuming so.
Yeah, so that's probably where that'll play out, Ray. There'll be people who will object based on the movement away from democracy and the notion of free speech.
Are things a mess?
Things are a mess.
It seems like when I pick up, like last night when I was just looking through everything, it just seemed to me, oh my God, you know, it seems like everything's a mess.
But isn't everything always a mess?
Well,
isn't
this
just
perspective?
Not this
mess.
This is really bad. I mean, this is really
messy.
There's
no good choices, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really messy. You know, I'm thinking, back to your question, I should have said I'm thinking, because people who are very progressive always drop the G. And I don't know that I'm in absolutely that camp. You know what I'm talking about or not?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So some
you're
people
thinking?
Thinking. I'm thinking.
I'm thinking.
As opposed to what I'm thinking. Mm. It's a sort of a hint.
It shows your stripes.
It shows your
okay.
shows,
or
shows,
lack
shows,
of.
I'm thinking. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll get you a fisherman's cap for the next half hour.
A Greek fisherman's cap.
Right.
Okay, wow. Wait,
well, Ray, you're showing your card.
All right, comrade.
Because I almost bought one yesterday.
Did you really? I don't know if that's you, but hey, yeah. whatever.
No, it wasn't me. I looked in the mirror, and Roselle said, it's not you.
Yeah.
So I didn't buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but what was I saying? Do you
don't
remember?
Know.
You don't
well, not
remember?
Everything is bad. It seems like everything is
bad.
No,
we're
bad.
Talking about a mouse.
Oh, no, I know what I wanted to say. If you compare, I mean, here Hillary leaves the Secretary of State job.
Right.
Kerry campaigns for it really aggressively. Hillary, in the beginning, there were questions. There was Benghazi. There was this and that. But basically, Hillary looks pretty good in terms of how she conducted herself as the Secretary of State. And I think that Kerry may have thought that, you know, you move into this and you go around and you do your thing. And people say, well, he was Secretary of State, you know, presidential candidate, Secretary of State, senator, a senior senator. And I think he may be having an Excedrin headache about right now.
This big, and it has Excedrin all over it. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk about Hillary Clinton and many other issues. Plus, we do have letters now, so we'll read those as well.
Good.
We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will return to the scintillating conversation this Monday morning. Ray's looking around, but it is here, my friend. It is here. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable, little Las Vegas jazz.
It's Joe Beam, my
yeah.
friend. Come on. This is a great way to relax, to get into the wake here.
Sure.
Seems
slowly.
Like you're like you're in a
very nice
little cabaret, a little club.
Or you know, a sound insulated elevator.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's the other.
Yeah.
No, I love Joe Beam.
In fact, I
was listening to it this weekend.
You know,
I feel we're getting in the week good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you're dropping the G again?
Yeah, very
you
nice.
You are a populist.
I want to reestablish my
power to the people. All right.
You know, I just, well, I was just thinking about, when I said Las Vegas, I just thought of this, but we lost Steve Rossi over the weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Marty Allen and Steve Rossi. Allen and
hello
Rossi.
Hello there. Goodbye there.
A great comedy team, and Steve Rossi passed away over the weekend at the age of 82 of cancer.
Not a bad ride.
And not a bad ride at all. And, of course, Alan and Rossi probably best known for
their hairdos.
Terrible movies.
No.
Their hairdos, I remember.
Well, yeah. Well, especially Marty Allen.
Marty Allen's
hairdo. Yeah, Marty Allen.
For being not entirely funny
all the time.
I agree with you, Ray, but you're not supposed to say that on the way out.
All right, whatever.
They were the guests on, weren't they the guests on both the Elvis and the Beatles Ed Sullivan shows?
I didn't know.
My goodness.
Is this Trivial Pursuits now?
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw that out.
There'll be a lot more Beatle trivia being discussed in the next few weeks as Sir Paul gets to launch his U.S. tour here in Albany.
Fingers crossed.
This is a great show.
I'll
take Quinn
crossed.
Martin Productions for 10, Alex. I'm going to do trivia.
I'll take Wing Martindale.
Okay.
Right down, yeah. Okay, let's go over to the letters and the mailbag. Go ahead.
Okay, mailbag. Okay, so from the Department of, we never said it, but, you know, putting words in our mouth.
Right.
I disagree with the idea that John Kerry is angling for another run as president. Did anybody say
that?
No,
you did not say that.
I didn't say it.
Although you may have implied
it's an interesting point, though. Do you think he's angling for another? I think he's happy.
No.
Being miserable.
He's got everything he needs. Got 57 varieties.
All right.
As someone in Mass who has followed him since he spoke to Congress as a vet, I am absolutely convinced that what he said over the years is correct. Being Secretary of State was a job of his life, and then some more. Hillary repaired some damaged relationships. She was not tasked with many serious tasks. Oh, boy. John Kerry jumped in because he was always wanted to do state diplomacy. Okay, so that's that one. And And Michael says, who cares? Let all the tribes slaughter each other. They've been doing it for centuries. Let's use our troops to protect our borders here and make sure they don't bring their Islamofascism to this country. And that's from Michael. And then let's see here. Peggy says, thank you for speaking of Robert J. I recall the moment you spoke about, and it was so like him. Your program is a gift, Peggy. That's nice. Thank you, Peggy. I guess that's it. Did you see anything else, Joseph?
Did you see the one from Gary?
No, I didn't. And I don't know why I didn't. But so maybe he wrote just to you. So
okay.
It said, since 2003, we've spent $3 trillion in Iraq, and everyone in that region hates us. The UN estimates that in those 11 years, it would have cost us only $330 billion to end world hunger, and everybody would have loved us. Perhaps we need to drop bread instead of bombs.
That would imply doing the right thing for the most people, as opposed to the right thing for the people who are running things. Yeah, or
I think
running things.
I'm thinking you're right, Alan. But I agree. I think Gary's point is painfully, tragically very true.
Yeah. It's exactly right.
All right, let's move on to to other information and go to what is happening on the pages of the Times Union and an ongoing issue regarding rail coming through the city.
Well, connecting upstate New York, you know, we have pretty good rail service from Albany to New York City, but people want to improve the passenger experience from Albany across Syracuse, Rochester to Buffalo. Right now, the train tracks that they use can only accommodate them going up to about 79 miles an hour. There's several proposals to elevate that. Some want to get it up to 90. Some want to get it up to the speed that European trains regularly travel at, 110, and that would be a important economic link and an important transportation link. However, all of the plans would involve using track and track beds that are owned by or controlled by CSX Transportation Company, which runs enormous numbers of freight trains across the state and, you know, leading out west and all over the Northeast, et cetera. And they have come out opposed to it. Eric Anderson, our business editor, who's our trains guy, he's all things trains. He has a story today after reading a copy of the filing that CSX Railroad put into the hopper. The State Department of Transportation is taking had been taking public comments, and that period is over now. And they are really opposed to this. They say it wouldn't be safe. It wouldn't be cost efficient. They really would rather see a separate, farther away from their rail lines, a separate rail line go across upstate New York to take passenger trains. And that cost would be so prohibitive. They'd have to obtain rights of way, and they would have to, you know, build the track. And that's just completely out of the picture, given the level of funding that's coming from the federal government at this particular time. So it looks like this is major opposition to a plan to at least improve rail passenger service across upstate New York. And that's too bad, because a lot of people, a lot of politicians, a lot of economic development people think that would kind of open up upstate to a lot more business travel. And it looks like it's at least in jeopardy now.
Well, you know, that's so interesting because, as you know, Andrew Cuomo sees this upstate conundrum as being, a major thing for him to be able to do better for upstate. And you're exactly right. This would be great. One suspects, however, when one reads a filing of this kind, that what's really going on is that the railroad is setting up itself for the eventual negotiation that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And here, there are so many complicated variables. Who gave what money to whose campaign? What secret deals have been secretly arrived at? Those are the things that we don't know right now. But it seems to me that if the governor of this state, who has a reputation for not not taking phone calls, and I had just been thinking I better turn the thing off. Because when you're on the air, you can't you can't take phone calls. So I think this is just the opening gambit. That's my bet, because I know that this guy Cuomo doesn't take prisoners, and I know if he wants something, he'll get it. The question is, how much does he want it?
Well, it is expensive to improve rail passenger service.
Sure.
And, you know, the freight train companies would rather just see all passenger service just, you know, end, because they're just an annoyance. They have to share the tracks. They have to manage the schedules. But, you know, it really comes down to how much this nation wants to promote rail traffic, both on regional and across the country. The level of funding from the federal government doesn't come close to what European countries spend, and the results are there. We don't have light rail in the region. We don't have better rail service, faster rail service, safer rail service, because, you know, we're wedded to the automobile and the superhighway.
Very, very frustrating.
The other issue that you talk about in the paper, which I think is fascinating, is that and I don't know, for some reason we mentioned these the other day. I don't remember why, but we have the new parking system in Albany, relatively new, where you don't have the meters now. You have those tickets that you put in on your dashboard.
I love that system.
Yeah, I love the system
everybody,
too.
Yeah.
The problem is they're not writing as many tickets.
That's right. Well, in Albany, and these meters are in other areas in the Northeast and Western Mass, et cetera. But the Tim O'Brien, our reporter today, has a piece about how in Albany already the parking meters use has about a 6% increase in revenue. So it's gone up since they put these meters in. They're getting, you know, a bump of maybe, I don't know, $10,000, $11,000. However, the fines that they collect for overdue parking has gone way down.
How come?
Because this is a more successful system. People are able to buy several hours, and they're able to, you know, pay.
They don't have to go running it back out.
Right.
And the quarter thing.
Right. They don't have to go run into a store and say, can you break a dollar? I need some quarters,
right.
You know. And they can do it with their credit cards. Most people are doing it with their credit cards, in fact. You can still pop quarters in, but most people are using credit cards, and it's made it a lot easier and a lot more convenient, and people are happy, and there's more free
and
parking.
People were happy. And the people were happy. And Michael Klein, who is the very successful head of the parking authority.
Yes.
And he knows what he's doing. You know, he watches what's going on around the country. Manhattan, that's what they're doing now. There are no more parking meters.
So you save money then through attrition or otherwise limiting the number of those who write parking tickets?
Well, that's not true.
Wouldn't that make sense?
Steve Smith, the spokesman for the Albany Police Department, says we still have to go out there and we still have to enforce, and it's not an automatic benefit in that regard.
Yeah, but how many people do they have doing it?
Exactly.
Seems to be the argument. I agree. I think there'll be a point when they'll realize they need fewer enforcement people.
Mm.
But at this point, they're not.
And are you sure? Because,
yeah.
I mean, I used to go out.
Well, this is what he says. This is what he just told us.
No, I have no. I would never call a policeman a liar. I would
not. Steve Smith has a lot of integrity.
He does. He's a wonderful man. But one of the things is that I used to walk out on the avenue here, or everybody was checking cars. There was all these guys in brown uniforms. And I wondered where they all came from. There were so many of them. I didn't know, you know, how they got all those people. I don't see those people anymore.
Yeah. Well, looking down the road, there's even more technology that other communities have used that may make that easier to use fewer enforcement officers. And that is these wired meters that they'll be able to just troll and it will go beep, beep when someone is overdue, and they won't have to walk around. And they'll even be able to look at a computer from one part in the city and see where all the errant parkers are and go over and overdue parkers are and go give tickets that way. So technology will eventually catch up, and people will be able to even pay with their smartphones like they can in some communities.
But what about jobs? I mean, that's the thing. If you have all these people checking on the meters, that's a job, right? So
that's
now,
true.
If the technology once again obviates the job, I was listening to the BBC on the way in here at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they had a show on in which They were talking about people are going to live to 1,000 years old. 1,000 years old.
Okay.
What would the retirement age then be? Well, 665 years or something?
Right, right. I keep telling Roselle we can't spend the money from the pension because she may live to 100.
Right.
And that's right. If you live to 1,000. Can you imagine?
It kind of you have to recalculate your portfolio, sure. I think. You know.
Which all goes back to whether or not the people in the brown uniforms should, whether we're wise
so we should,
to save
we should
the money.
Maybe go back to a system where it's easier to catch people overdue parking. One of the things we talked about last week, Joe, was that the difference here with this new system is that we used to be able to pull into a parking space that somebody still had, you know, maybe an hour or two on, and you'd kind of pick up that. That's been erased, so the public doesn't get that little extra bonus.
Yeah, once that card pulls away, that time is gone.
But I had
a new transaction there.
I wanted to buy some socks one day. Yeah. So I had already put money in front of the legislature into the car, and I had the receipt.
The finest socks are sold at the legislature.
You know, give me the Sheldon East today.
You were parking near the state capital to go to a store.
Then
to
I
buy
went
socks.
Down to downtown Albany to the haberdashery. There are very few of them. I think it's lodges.
Yes.
And I went down there and I wondered whether that little piece of paper that I had, which still had time on it, would still be good down there as well as up in front of the legislature. I took a chance and apparently it worked.
Or it was not detected that
enforce
it was connected
to
another.
Well, I don't really know.
That is a good question.
I know one thing.
Can you buy an all-day pass and park anywhere?
Maybe they weren't looking.
Well, looking. I heard you say it. I heard you drop the G.
You know,
well done.
Having the ease and availability of parking in the city will only improve things and bring in more people to do shopping and to pick up socks and go to haberdasheries and other
stuff. How often do you hear the word haberdasher?
No, you don't.
It's a great word.
No.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's a great word.
I'm thinking that.
I'll take a pair of the Joe Brunos and...
Harry Truman owned a haberdashery. He went broke.
It was the launch of a great political career.
Where has the time gone?
All right, let's go. Let's go back, and we're going to take a break.
Oh, good. Oh,
a regroup.
A
cleansing.
Slow it down a little bit.
A cleansing, if you will, and we'll be back and hear some new letters, and also wrap up on some topics that we have left. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support comes from Haldora, Rhinebeck, Women's Clothing Designs and Natural Fibers, Linen, Silk, Cottons, Sewn in Upstate New York, Hanro of Switzerland Bras and Panties, Fabrizio, Jewelry Collections, Haldora.com. Norman Rockwell Museum, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, presenting the exhibition The Unknown Hopper, Edward Hopper as Illustrator, NRM.org. And Lewis Sign Company, a family business celebrating 90 years in the community, supplying signs, LED message centers, digital printing, vehicle wraps, sign and lighting service. Tell the world with signs, lewissigns.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and...
it's all right.
I didn't realize he was on the
phone.
It's
an elevator. It's a phone booth. It doesn't matter.
What is? Did I miss something?
No, I didn't realize I wouldn't have come back.
You were taking
a call. You were on the phone.
It was actually my dentist's office.
Yeah, it's
saying they were confirming my appointment.
Give me 40 on Maid of Hearts in the 7th. Yes. Well done.
And while you're at it, pick me up a pair of socks so I don't have to park.
At the haberdashery.
Right. Okay. So with that call, do you have letters for us?
Oh, yeah, letters. Yeah, sure I do. I'm sure I do, because if you say so, then I'm sure I do. okay. No, that's not a really good one. That's one of those other ones. Okay, Michael says, when Robert J. Lurtzen reported the news, he always concluded with, and that's some of today's news.
That's
kind
true.
Of his commentary. Okay. And then Tony says, the parking system in Albany was in place... in places like Vienna, Austria, in the 80s. Now in Vienna, one uses their smartphone. No quarters, no tickets. We are so far behind. And Tom says, dear Roundtable, gee, maybe if we hadn't wasted $3 trillion in the Middle East, we'd have enough money to invest on a separate passenger rail line. And
hard to argue with that.
You know, and all like that. And I think that's it, isn't it? Joe?
That seems to be it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So we just have about 2 or 3 minutes left.
Oh, let's talk about parking some more. Please.
No,
you don't
no,
think
no,
important?
No.
I think
it's a quality of life issue, right?
I think, and it's all over our listening area, which is what I like about it. You know, it's not only here in Albany, but I'm sure they have it in.
That's right.
You know,
people park cars everywhere.
So this is
all the rest of it.
Let's talk about a world event, which of course is the World Cup, which is happening in Brazil. And so yesterday, if you were near a television, it seemed like much of the nation was glued to this game, with Portugal, United States, Portugal, 2-2, a tie. We thought we had it, and then boom,
we didn't have
done.
It.
Didn't have it.
And it still ended as a tie, right?
It ended as a tie.
We didn't lose it. We just didn't have it.
Which I don't quite understand. It's like, don't they have another 20 minutes? Why can't they just try?
There was only 10 or 20 seconds left. Oh, I see. Why football, international football,
doesn't end in a tie.
Right. They don't break ties. I think if it were the final game, there would be extra time, and then there would be shootouts.
Shootout.
But I'm sure.
Were you watching it?
I was.
Wasn't it great?
It was incredible enthusiasm in the home of a friend that I was watching it with, and friends.
Now I have a theory.
Yes. And then we were disappointed at the last 10 seconds, of course.
But I have a theory, which is that many kids play soccer, right? So soccer has been a big part of the school programs and the sports programs.
Youth sports.
What'd you say? Yeah.
Youth sports.
But it has never made it in terms of the big league. You know. And I've often wondered about that. And so this morning, again, listening to the BBC, they announced that people had made accusations that the Ghana people had been accused of fixing some officials. Of fixing matches, denied, of course, by the Ghanese. That led me to start thinking about, you know, does that make our win over Ghana in the beginning less important?
Oh, I see. They might have let us win so they could position themselves against maybe an easier mark later on.
Maybe. That's sometimes the way it's done. And I think the
critics are saying today, the people who know a lot about international soccer, is that U.S.'s team has finally made a transition to play more European-style soccer. And that is because of their German coach.
And players.
And the players that they've recruited from various places outside of the 48.
Yeah. Contiguous.
Right.
That ain't right.
But the U.S. does have. They say their performance, even though the first goal that Portugal got against the U.S. in the game in the match yesterday was kind of cheap goal and poor playing on the part of the U.S. team. The U.S. came back and kept pounding away, and they equaled it, and then they went ahead. Then they maybe got a little hubris too soon before the end of the game and got. And lost the victory to a.
How long do you think that match was? How long was that match?
Well, they say it was 90 minutes. Joe is the official time, but the clock was going. They say there was like about 5 or 6 minutes of uncounted time, because the clock you see on the TV screen doesn't account for stops at the referee time.
Yeah, so it's like two hours. You know, say 2 hours of a game, and you end in a 2-2 tie.
Yeah,
maybe that's why it hasn't caught on.
No, I'll give you the. Yeah. If you give me 10 seconds, I'll tell you why.
Like that, you know.
I'll tell you why it hasn't caught on.
Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
It's not built for commercials. In other words,
yes, that's true.
Baseball, football, they're built for commercials. Soccer, a lot of continuous action, not built for commercials.
Couldn't they do something to fix that?
They have to change the game.
Water breaks, and they have, although they didn't have too many last night.
So that's why it's not caught on with advertisers and thus networks here, and that's why you are where you are.
And Joe, I just want to say one more letter from Matt, who said that he, just for laughs, I occasionally, because there's no way to get from the Albany train station to Albany. It's in Rensselaer, of course.
Yes, right? That's correct.
He said, I called the CDTA for directions on how to take a bus to the airport, and they were stumped. The best response required 3 separate buses.
Yeah. You could certainly mitigate the difficulty getting around here in public transit by coordinating it a little better. But some feel it was maybe a mistake to put that across the river.
I do.
Well, we're done.
All right, yeah, we are done. We are out of time. Want to thank everybody for joining us. You can keep the conversation going. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Love being with you. Thank you.
Thank you.